I feel like your glasses are about to fall.
That is the summary.
They're balanced so on the edge of your nose. It's kind of like they're hanging on for dear life. Is that the grandpa look?
So that I can better look down my nose at you.
You are listening to From the Dome to Your Home podcast, the Municipal Association's weekly look at legislative action and issues facing cities and towns around the state. I'm your host, Casey Fields. Everybody, I have exciting news. Very, very special guest this week, Scott Slatton, everybody.
That is not the exciting news that I thought you were going to break.
Oh, no.
So, in other words, you have none.
No, I don't have anything.
Okay, that's what I thought.
That was just, I'm going to come up with a different lead-in to bring you in every week.
That was quite the tease.
To bring you in every week, because you're the guest.
Everybody was excited to hear about the exciting
news.
And then they were like,
oh. It's just Scott.
Yeah.
He's a regular guest. So how have you been?
It's been an up and down week.
Yeah.
So I feel good today.
Good.
So
glad to hear
I'm
that.
I'm happy to be back at full speed, and we'll continue into the weekend and see how that goes.
Excellent. You've got plans this weekend?
None.
Plans, or you're just going to get
It's going
to
rain all day Saturday.
Yeah,
it's supposed to be awful, like thunderstorms and another rain like we had earlier this week.
Let me tell you something. The creeks and the streams around my neighborhood are...
I told you yesterday the
it's disturbing.
The river was jumping the banks, so...
Yeah, it's high.
And there's more coming.
And we got the Kicking Koalas have a tournament this weekend. I don't know if we're going to play on Saturday.
You're not going to play if you don't play in the rain.
Well, if it's not storming, they won't play.
Correct. That's right.
So, and our games aren't until Saturday afternoon.
It's supposed to rain all day.
Like 1 o'clock and 5 o'clock.
Very volatile weather.
And I doubt that we're going to play in the rain, because that would screw the fields up real bad, wouldn't it?
Got a low pressure system coming up out of the Gulf.
Got it.
Got cold air coming in behind it. Relatively cold air. It's going to bring a lot of volatility to the atmosphere.
So what
starting
about
Friday in the overnight hours on Friday and all through Saturday?
What about Sunday?
Sunday's supposed to be clear and sunny.
So maybe they could do what the Vipers did last weekend and just play a one-day tournament.
Well, presuming that your fields drain well enough.
Yeah. See, I don't. Yes. We're out in Irmo, I think, somewhere.
Hmm.
Scott, we are a week and 2 days from the opening of filing for office for our South Carolina House and South Carolina Senate.
Well, it's a good thing that we shored up our bona fides with our base this week.
Right. We, the constitutional carry,
permitless carry bill. Yes.
Bill, they met one time in conference committee last week.
Yes.
Just agreed to work on it.
Right.
They met Tuesday. Today is Thursday. So the conference committee met again this past Tuesday.
Correct.
They passed out a conference report, which I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, is largely the Senate version of the bill.
Yes.
The House immediately took up that conference report on Tuesday and passed it out.
Yep.
The Senate could not get unanimous consent on Tuesday to take it up, but they did... it was on their calendar Wednesday. So they took it up Wednesday. They talked about it a good bit. And
it was almost kind of filibustery.
It felt real filibustery.
I
feel like filibuster should be like a weather term. It feels like blustery. It feels a little filibustery.
The final tally was 28 to 18 in the Senate in favor of the conference report.
That's correct.
Did Chip Campson vote against it?
I believe he did.
I think he did. He said he was going to.
Rankin voted against it. I believe Davis voted against it.
Really?
There was a handful of Republicans that did not support the bill, but then there were also Democrats like Fanning who voted for it.
Really?
So there was a crossover.
Huh. I did not. Because 28-18 is really close to what the Democrat-Republican
And there were some people that weren't there, and they were,
that's 46.
Well,
28 and 18
So
46,
there were some crossover. Not all Democrats voted against it. Not all Republicans voted for it.
Right. I thought it was interesting during the discussion, I think it was yesterday, or no, it was
Senator
Tuesday.
Senator Bright Matthews was the majority of the discussion yesterday.
So Tuesday,
late yesterday afternoon.
Tuesday afternoon, Senator Brad Hutto from Orangeburg, who was the chairman of the conference committee, explained the bill. Mm-hmm. He took the conference report.
Okay.
And I thought it was interesting that Senator Campson got up and asked Senator Chip Campson from Charleston, Isle of Palms, who's a sportsman and is a big advocate of training, mm-hmm. got up and asked, is the hostage crisis over?
Right. I heard that.
And that question refers...
I was like, what are you talking about?
That question refers to the fact that the proponents of the permitless carry mm-hmm. would not allow a standalone felony possession of a weapon,
right?
A convicted felon possessing a weapon, those enhanced penalties would not let a standalone bill move forward to just address that problem.
Until
convicted felons
right.
in possession, which is illegal, but in South Carolina there's no enhanced penalty for
right.
that if you're convicted of that. So in exchange for that felony possession enhancement to go forward, the proponents of the permitless carry bill said, okay, we'll let that go forward, but only as a part of our permitless carry bill, and we'll get what we want and you'll get what you want. But interestingly enough to me, those two concepts are in conflict.
Right, right. Yeah, no kidding,
it seems.
To say the least. Yeah.
So we're now waiting on the governor to
they've got to
sign,
ratify.
Well, they got to ratify. That's
and
right.
And then we're awaiting the governor's signature. And in the language of the bill, it says that it is effective upon signature.
So as early
so
as
immediately.
Yeah. So as early as tonight and maybe even Friday, whatever the date is mm-hmm. tomorrow, all of us will be allowed to start walking around
with a gun on your hip,
toting mm-hmm. a firearm wherever we want to go. Except for in those places where a sign has been erected outside
right.
to tell us that we cannot carry that firearm into that business, school. Well, schools, there are a number of properties that are where you are prohibited from carrying, whether or not it's placarded, I think.
Right.
But as we've talked about before, mm-hmm. our building here at 1411 Gervais Street is placarded
that's right.
to say you cannot bring a weapon, concealable weapon, and that language is the same, mm-hmm. whether it's open or not. You can't bring that weapon in here. And if you do, then you can face mm-hmm. penalties up to 3 years in prison for violating that section of the law.
There's also included in there a requirement where CWP classes have to be offered free of charge in every county, I think, twice a month.
Correct. SLED has been charged with contracting with CWP instructors because the big CWP
right.
was afraid that they were going to be put out of business if SLED was conducting this training. But
right.
no,
right.
it's written so that SLED has to contract with these, with big CWP
right.
to offer these classes twice a month in each county for free to the trainees.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but you do not have to have a CWP.
No, you do not.
So
the CWP requirement to carry a firearm openly or concealed is now gone. It that requirement is gone. You can still get it. And there's an incentive in the law, and we can talk about it in a minute. I think we've already talked about it, but there's an incentive for you to do that, but it's not enough of an incentive for
right.
a lot of people to do that. So we'll see how it goes.
So that happened this week. And then the Senate that is, I believe, since it's Thursday, they are still in session. And they have been on, let me just check this real quick. Yep, they are. With Senator Greg Hembree from North Myrtle Beach holding the floor on a committee amendment to his bill to reform the Judicial Merit Selection Commission.
Yes.
And how judges are selected and screened and elected in South Carolina.
This is on the heels of some judicial elections that took place.
One.
Yeah. Oh, it was just one. Okay.
Judge Kittredge was elected the new Chief
incoming.
Justice,
yeah.
yes, of the South Carolina Supreme
okay.
Court.
All right.
So we, I believe, now have an all-male Supreme Court.
We have had
that's
since
right,
Kay Hearn retired. Yeah.
Now we have an all-white male
yes.
Supreme Court.
Yes. For the four remaining members after Chief Justice Beatty retires.
Correct.
Is forced into retirement. That's a state law.
Right.
Once 72. You reach 72, you can't be a judge anymore. But
this has been a real hot button issue with judicial elections. And
you made an interesting observation earlier. You want
to? Oh, no. Well, just remind me because I make a lot of observations, Scott.
You
want to
do some rank punditry here?
Yeah, I love some punditry.
So you made the observation.
Fox News or whatever you watch.
Let's put you on the couch. You made the observation that this issue seems to be one that is not of partisan making. It is more a making of older members of the House and Senate versus younger members, and that's a relative term.
Yeah, after watching the debate for several days and, you know, the committee and the different people that they brought in to testify in front of these different, you know, the committees as these bills have moved through, it looks like this is a new member versus old member.
Junior member, yeah.
Senior member as far as, you know, the people that have had experience and some that have sat on the JMSC, the Judicial Merit Selection Commission, and have been involved in the process and have been there for a while, can kind of see the mountains and the valleys that come with that.
Yeah.
And I think that the junior members that have been there not as long as the more senior members in time served, not in age necessarily,
right.
they can't, they're kind of walking around in the forest, not really looking, they're looking at one tree and not the big picture. I could be totally wrong. It was a question on the Republican primary ballot.
Yeah.
And it was obviously a loaded question.
Yes, of course.
And so I think a lot of people are going to point to that to say, you know,
the Republican primary voters want
a change.
Right.
I don't think if I walk down Gervais Street right now and stop somebody and said, hey, what do you think about the Judicial Merit Selection Commission? I think they'd look at me and be like,
What are
you talking about? And the only reason we know about it is because we are in the bubble. Yeah.
I would point out though that I said House and Senate. It's really more pronounced in the Senate
very much
than it is in the House.
Yes.
Because, you know, one of the chief, I don't want to call him a defender, but certainly one of the seemingly chief advocates or proponents of making incremental changes is Representative Mike Akaski from right across the river,
right.
Casey, West Columbia. He's an attorney, he's on the JMSC. Mm-hmm.
He
sees how it works.
He was chairman this year.
Yeah, he knows how it works. And of course, lawyer legislators in general are probably okay with it because they understand the inner workings of it. And they better than maybe you and I understand how some of the attacks on the system aren't necessarily valid.
Well, and I think that because of the situation where the man that was serving time got released so early by the judge, and his attorney was a lawyer legislator. That brought it. I think that just fueled a fire.
Yeah.
I don't think there really was a fire. I think this lit a match and blew it up.
No, I agree.
And then a talking point came out of that to say, well, you know, lawyer legislators, they're all corrupt.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, and I think that's, you know, it's been very interesting to watch the debate and the people, you know, the different senators who are asking the different questions and the people who have experience versus the people that don't have experience, and where, you know, there are some people who have both, who would love to see some incremental changes, but also have sat on the JMSC that know there are certain things that need to be tweaked. But Scott, if, you know, it's kind of
the pure alternative though, Casey, is publicly allowing voters to elect judges.
Yeah, that's not even being discussed.
I understand that. But
I see what you're
saying. But that's the pure alternative.
With paper ballots.
Yeah, we're only one of a couple of states in the country that has this, where the General Assembly appoints judges.
Mm-hmm.
So And I'm not sure I'm super comfortable with.
I'm not comfortable at all.
Voters voting for
judges,
because that, as partisan as the process could be now, and is accused of being, it would be purely partisan.
Correct.
At that point.
But then you've got money for campaigns, and then you've got money. You know, you think a lawyer legislator influences a judge. What about a huge donor to a campaign to get elected?
Of course.
So it's just like huge donors to campaigns for legislators. Yeah. I mean, you could argue this all day long. But anyway, this is holding up. I'm saying this to say this. We have two bills that are on the Senate calendar, the property tax fix, the property tax abatement.
Affordable bill, housing, 1017, property tax exemption.
Right. Mm-hmm. That bill, we don't need to go into detail, but then 1021, the abandoned building tax credit.
Yep.
Those two bills are sitting on the Senate uncontested calendar.
Waiting for debate.
But because they have adjourned with this judicial reform bill in interrupted debate, after they go through the local calendar and read new bills, they immediately, because it's an interrupted debate status, they go immediately to that bill. They can't even go through uncontested bills on the calendar. So it's holding up bills that we're trying to get out before a crossover.
And time's a-wasting, yes. Yes.
It's creeping that
because
direction.
11 April is the crossover date.
So. I think it's 9, actually.
Thursday's the 11th.
Yeah, no, but I think it's the 9th.
What?
I think.
The second Tuesday? I thought it was the second Thursday. It's the second Thursday.
I need to go look. Joni and I were having this debate not long ago about when it was.
It's Thursday.
But it's the point is
that week. Second week of April.
It's about a month away.
No, it's closer than that. Is it?
So, well, today's the 7th.
Oh, is it really?
So either if it's the 9th or the 11th, here we go.
I have no idea what the date is today.
Well, you would say, well, Casey, it's March the 7th, so it's practically June. Happy July 4th, then we're back in school.
It is hot outside.
So that is what happens when bigger issues that are somewhat politically charged
get in the way,
then other bills get stalled. That is just the nature of the business.
Although, unlike some of these other issues that have kind of gummed up everything for this at this point in the session, that's an actual public policy.
Oh yeah,
argument and discussion.
It's a great debate
that will make a difference to South Carolinians across the state every day. So unlike some of these other in terms of how
it's actual policy, it's not just a political hacky thing.
Precisely. Yeah. I mean, there's obviously politics involved in it, but it is a legitimate public policy discussion that needs to be had.
Another bill that is now in the Senate that what easily made crossover is the military TIF bill, 4552, that unanimously with flying colors, a parade, cheerleaders, and t-shirt guns passed the House this week.
Yeah.
That is now over in the Senate awaiting a committee.
Erica Wright on our staff helped to shepherd that bill through. I saw her in the lobby earlier today, and she said, I had some conversations with some members who were, one was interested maybe in putting it on the contested calendar and not letting it go through, but he got something else that he wanted, and so that didn't happen, and everybody's happy, and
excellent.
We're moving forward, so the process is working.
So let's talk about what next week could look like. Just a little bit, because it's going to be a little bit different.
Well, hold on a second.
Okay.
Do you want to talk about the latest liquor liability?
Well, I mean,
proposal or not?
Sure. The liquor liability to me, like the one bill, the study committee bill in the Senate, is awaiting a full committee meeting.
Well, let me tell you what.
And then in the House, that bill 5066 was placed on the contested calendar.
Yeah.
And they didn't get even in the same neighborhood as the contested calendar today.
So this morning, the Senate Banking and Insurance Committee had a subcommittee meeting on a bill that Senator Billy Garrett from McCormick filed, Senate Bill 1050, that would subject liquor liability insurers to scrutiny over rate setting from the Department of Insurance.
Okay.
They carried that bill over, which means it's for all intents and purposes, not going anywhere. However, at the end of the discussion, so insurance representatives spoke today about what they think the problem is and why the premiums are so high.
Right.
Claims are a problem, of course. And they ultimately, as many others have, pointed back to the problem with joint and several.
Okay.
And the fact that they believe that we need joint and several liability reform here in South Carolina.
The insurance people said that.
Yes, the insurance people said that.
Okay.
And then Senator Hutto, again, he's on the subcommittee. He's a sponsor of the bill 1050, one of several. Said what everybody knows is the problem.
Okay.
And I think we've even said it when we were talking about the $1 million the requirement of bars and restaurants, anybody who serves alcohol after 5 o'clock, to have $1 million worth of liability coverage.
Right.
He said that the problem is really the minimum $1 million requirement. Because he said lawyers don't sue people with no insurance coverage.
Well, and there you have the truth, everybody. Spoken as plain as the nose on your face.
Where a lot of people have said, hey, that's the problem, is that and the reason we have claims.
Right.
Or more claims is because there's more money out there available.
And lawyers aren't going to waste their time to sue somebody for less than $1 million.
So, okay. But I know that's a simplification of the issue, but I really appreciated him saying that out loud.
And everybody, he's a lawyer.
Right. Yeah. Oh, he works in that space. Yeah.
He was not trashing lawyers because he's one.
He works in that space. So, yeah, that really is the root of the problem.
Right.
How to undo it, we don't know.
That's another real problem. Policy issue that will have a direct effect on South Carolina business owners.
Although Senator Hutto did suggest that there have been similar kinds of unique insurance problems that the state has faced over the years, like medical malpractice faced a similar problem.
Right.
Commercial workers' compensation insurance faced a similar problem years ago. And the General Assembly saw fit to kind of set those two into separate programs. Mm-hmm. And then, just like Jason Elliott's bill does, Representative Jason Elliott's bill from Greenville 5066 does, sets up a state-run insurance pool that helps to kind of stabilize the market. And then that helps bring people in. Now, I had not thought about those as very similar kinds of scenarios, right. But he's exactly right.
Yeah.
And that's really and he said this, I'm sure, unknowing of Representative Elliott's bill.
Right.
But he suggested exactly what Representative Elliott is proposing as a potential path forward to try and fix this liability problem.
Right.
But, so we'll see. We'll see if 5066 gets out of the House and over to the Senate, what kind of an appetite the Senate will have to take it up.
They, and you said this earlier, time is of the essence.
Yeah, we're running out of time.
It is, they're not doing anything next week because they're on the budget. So the rest of the calendar. The House is not.
Yes.
And then the week after Easter, I believe, they furlough. And so it's going to be difficult. They're going to have to bust it.
Right. Right. And of course the Senate is proposing to continue to plow forward, but they'll want to furlough at some point. I'm sure.
Yeah. I'm sure they will. I'm sure they will. Although I don't know. They're not real big fans of it. They're fans of taking like one perfunctory day around Easter and that's it.
So yeah.
We'll see what happens. Let's do talk about. Hold on. I'm looking at some text messages from Joni. She's been giving me updates. Monday at 1 p.m.
Yes.
The House comes into session. They do this on weeks that they take up the budget to give them plenty of time to get through and adopt their version, the House version of the budget coming out of the House Ways and Means Committee.
Right.
They go in at 1 o'clock. It is a $41 billion budget, which is less than in years past, correct?
Yeah, it was the current budget's 41 plus.
Right, right.
So it's pretty much a steady stay in the same ballpark budget this year.
The House Ways and Means Committee had a briefing for House members this morning, and they shared with everybody that they're included in the House Ways and Means Committee version of the budget is $624 million in new tax relief. $500 million of that is in property tax relief, which is averages about $350 per property.
That'll be a one-time deal.
And $13.9 million in new money for local government fund, which means it is fully funded at 5%.
Yeah. So take what you got this year and add 5% to it.
Joni said that Chairman Bannister said there were four big priorities in the budget this year.
Hmm.
Four big ones. Number one, reducing taxes. Number two, taking care of veterans. Number three, repairing aging bridges. Joni said the lifespan of a bridge is 60 to 70 years.
Yeah.
We've got bridges, a lot of them, that are over 90 years old,
sure,
that have not been repaired. So they're giving $200 million to the bridges.
Yeah.
And teacher recruitment and retention. Those are the big four.
What does that mean?
In terms of dollars.
Hmm.
There are a lot of other things that have been, you know, given.
How are they going to square that with injecting who knows how many tens and hundreds of millions of dollars into the new voucher program that they're trying to pass?
I have no idea.
You know, State Supreme Court heard oral arguments on the current voucher program yesterday.
Really?
Yeah. So we'll see if they
rule on. Now we've got a bill moving through the House or moving
that expands
the committee process.
Exponentially.
That expands,
yeah.
So that's kind of what we're following with the budget. As always, we are watching for the short-term rental proviso that we talked about this. It was introduced in committee and then withdrawn.
Yeah.
Who knows if somebody will try to do it on the floor. I doubt it.
I hope not, but
it
wouldn't surprise me.
Because it's always better with those kind of huge issues to be done in a standalone bill and to do it with all parties at the table.
So we'll all be over in the lobby next week, anxiously awaiting somebody to bring out what I call the hot sheet.
That's right.
It's got the list of the amendments that are going to be coming up. So all the lobbyists scramble over and try and get a copy of it. I always just take a picture,
right,
and then share it, send it to somebody else. But
and we can look at it and see kind of what to be prepared for and what's coming up.
As amendments get put up on the desk, a new hot sheet
now
comes out.
Now, I wonder, let's take a bet. What is going to be the Freedom Caucus hot issue this year?
Ooh, that's a great question.
With provisos. Last year it was diversity and DEI. Equity and inclusion programs in universities.
Well, that's a good standard. I mean, why not? Let's keep plugging away on that.
They may do that again.
Yeah.
But I just let's think about that. I'd like to report when Joni comes on the show next week to talk about the budget.
Interesting.
I'd like to know what they've got up their sleeve this year.
I couldn't even begin to guess.
Really, really can't wait for
that. Well, maybe some COVID-19 stuff. Right? I don't know.
I don't know.
But that's so passe anymore.
DEI kind of came out of nowhere last year.
Yeah.
So it could be something completely new.
We could go look at the National Freedom Caucus website, tell us.
That would help us out.
Yeah. Yeah.
That way we would know what they were trying to put in the budget or take out of the budget.
Yeah.
It gets testy because the hours are long and the topics are,
diverse,
controversial. So everything from public education to higher education to, all the things.
That's
there are
good.
A ton of sections in the budget and they go section by section. So, we'll be watching that because, everything. Every vote that's taken is quality campaign material.
Absolutely.
So everybody's watching.
You'll see lots of pictures of the voting board tweeted out with some sort of snarky message attached to it, I'm sure.
What else? That's really all I have for this week. It was not with the Senate stalled out on this bill, they didn't plow through their calendar like they normally do. And the House kind of adjourned abruptly today. So,
yeah, they got out in a hurry.
They got out pretty quickly.
No, I can't think of anything else of note that took place this week. We're continuing some negotiations and discussions on bills that are active right now, and we're always doing that, but hopefully we'll be moving forward once they get the budget. Once the House flushes the mouse on the budget, we'll be able to get to other things.
Right. So we'll be, and then after that, really, it's going to be crunch time.
Yeah.
And that's when it becomes imperative that we're all paying attention.
It's going to be a fun week.
And when I say all, I don't mean like me and you and Erica and Joni. I mean all of us, like all of us. Like all the mayors, royal all the council members, the royal we, yes. Everybody we. Let's do a little trivia.
Okay.
You ready?
Mr. Producer was crowing before we started the show that this one was going to
I think you said you're never going to get this one. Okay. You ready?
Sure.
What are the municipalities in South Carolina that have names that connect to precious metals or gems? Gem, like G-E-M-S, like a gem.
Ruby.
Yeah. What county is that in?
It's in Chesterfield County.
Chesterfield County.
Silver Street in Newberry County.
I give up. Yeah, that's it, Scott. That's it.
Oh, that's it?
You got it. Way to bank on that, Russell.
Boom.
Yeah, you tore that one up.
I'm going to drop the mic.
Right. I think you just harassed the mic, but yeah.
Sorry. I couldn't just take it. It was too much of a struggle to pull it off the stand here and drop it. Okay, good. Wow.
Yeah, wow. Ruby and Silver Street are both two of the municipalities in South Carolina that are named for gems or precious metals.
Don't test me.
Yeah. I've caught that a couple times.
Okay. That's the end of the show.
You don't get to call that.
I'm set for the weekend now. I'm very excited. Very proud of that.
What? Because you got the trivia question
right?
Yeah.
Go
pick you up some growlers and go to the property and don't leave for
going
the weekend.
Going to the bogey barn tonight.
Tell everybody that you got the trivia question on your podcast. Sorry. Check that. My right. podcast.
Yes.
Everybody, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. Be sure to follow the Municipal Association's podcasts on Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Audible, Spotify, and SoundCloud. Find the latest from the Municipal Association on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and the Association's website, masc.sc.